There are thousands of stories waiting to be told. Some that have never been heard before. And so, I'm here to tell those stories. Stories to thrill, to sadden, to excite, and to educate and annoy. I am your storyteller, so let's get on with the story, shall we? Welcome to Season 2, my friends. This will be the start of a brand new deal, but same old stuff that you know and love. So let's jump into some malicious compliance. Sometimes it's not always good to get the things you ask for, and you have to be a little more specific. We don't need any of that anymore. 20 years ago, I was an administrative assistant to the training director in my company. For unknown reasons, the CFO had it out for her and our department as a whole because he didn't see any value in what we did. The company got in some kind of pinch financially and laid a number of people off, including my director. From that point, I knew my days were numbered since I could not be an assistant to no one. I'm still good friends with my old director, who hired me at a prestigious company when she makes more and her work is actually appreciated. When my turn came, the VP who let me go was not unkind, but ignorantly dismissive of my concerns regarding reports and other tasks that I alone completed for the company, including an extremely complex, time-consuming report that had taken me a month to master after my director created it. These days, that kind of report could be handled easily with the right kind of software, but not back then. Some of the other details of my job included vendor contacts and contracts, as well as employee travel for various conferences. "Don't worry about that," she airily assured me. "We don't need any of that anymore. You can use your 2 weeks' notice to get rid of it for me." Surprised but annoyed, I took her at her word, deleting the files and shredding a good deal of now unnecessary paperwork, clearing up all my contact information, and so forth. Amazingly, in a layoff situation, I ended up getting a new job in the same company, and I'm still here in that position, which I love. This is pertinent to the story because I had not remained at the same company, I would not have received dozens of phone calls, emails from the VP, and those she had retained in the department, asking me how to do this or that for booking, travel, hotels, conferences, and vendor contacts for various things. Instructions on the new difficult report and more. Fortunately, my new position is in a separate division and is extremely busy with constant customer contact, so we are not supposed to be on the phone. This gave me leeway to answer in gentle and innocent puzzlement each time. Oh, VP told me none of that information was needed anymore, so I don't have any of that because she told me to get rid of it. If they asked me about the report, I would reply breezily, "That one is so tough. It takes a lot of practice, and I have already forgotten. Oops, a customer's waiting. Gotta go." Rest assured that this was not a scenario in which I destroyed company info or did anything illegal or even unethical. My friends back in my old department would chortle over how the VP and her underlings had to recreate the wheel, and I was never in trouble in the least. After all, I had done only what the VP told me to.
If you don't like it, you can leave. I know this isn't an epic professional malicious compliance story, but it was fun and rewarding when it happened. When I was in school, about 14 years old, we got a new arts teacher. Our previous one was amazing. She used to be a famous painter in our state and wanted to teach in her free time and paint just for pleasure. She taught us the basic techniques and encouraged us to create and experiment. She also implemented an arts fair in our school, kind of like a science fair. We had a big theme. Each grade had a sub-theme that would fit. The students used to split into groups and come up with an idea that would use some of the material in the curriculum and still had a lot of freedom to create. So we would have to clear it with her, and she helped us with ideas, materials, and guidance. The fair had been going for years, and one that the parents actually liked to attend, going back even after their kids already left the school. It's important to note that the school was really not a big one. My grade was the last one that was taught there, and we only had 20 to 30 students per grade. We also had classes together, and we all knew each other well. The awesome teacher's health wasn't that good anymore, and she retired. In comes new teacher that, from the get-go, seemed pretty intimidated and full of hatred for our previous teacher. She would talk pretty badly about our previous teacher's work and say that what we learned was useless and that everything we were doing was bad and wrong and since we were never taught any better, etc., etc. We already didn't like her, but it was our last year there and we weren't confrontational. Then, time for art fair comes up and we were excited. Our whole theme is art from our country, and each grade got a specific state. The one my grade got was really rich culture, with charismatic clothes, dances, etc. We were excited and started organizing ourselves. Then the new teacher tells us none of that is going to be presented. She wants us to split into groups of twos and make sort of a painting using paper mache and trapped objects of that state in it. We were like, but we want to present the dance. We already talked with someone who has clothes for us to borrow to present in a living statue. We want to do more. And she went on a rant about how our old teacher used to let us do anything, but we were not following the curriculum, and it was ridiculous. That she knew what was better and best for us, and we were all brats. That the old teacher made the art fair become a laughing matter because she would not have it. We tried presenting our reasons, and we said we have over 10 of the exact same thing that was not going to represent the culture of each state. It would be boring to look at, in that we wouldn't mind doing it if we could do more. She got angrier and angrier with us trying to talk to her, so she said, "This is my class, and if you don't like it, you can leave." So, of course, we left. All of us just got up and left. We went straight to the principal's office that was tiny. She agreed to see us, and it was a mess. All of us teenagers, feeling that we're not being treated fairly, complaining that about our teacher all at once. Our teacher finally showed up crying. Our principal asked us to wait outside of her office. Finally, three of us were invited back inside, where our version was asked. The teacher was still there, and we explained that what happened, and that what we wanted with her crying in the corner and sobbing all the time. I'm glad to say that none of us let that make us back away. And the principal didn't allow it either. We reached a compromise. We would make sure to have at least 5 of those hideous, quote-unquote, paintings she wanted, and we would still be allowed to do everything else we wanted. The fair itself was horrible. Our class was the only one allowed to do anything different, so every room just had things hanging in the wall. It all looked similar to each other. Ours had typical food from each state for people to snack on, dance presentation every 30 minutes, and people doing living statues with full clothes we got from the cultural center, a TV showing short movies from artists of that state, and a bunch of students wearing some attire from there, and a ton of information about the state to tell visitors. Plus 5 of those paintings in the corner that no one paid attention to. It didn't take 2 more years for the art fair to stop happening, since it didn't get attendance from the public anymore, and the parents complained about the waste of time, plus the waste of money that school had hosting it. Forced me to obtain my own work uniform with no notice after slashing my hours? Really? By Little Lost Angels. This is nothing compared to the epic stories in the subreddit, but here you go anyway. My final retail job was a preppy designer clothing store. When I started working there, we were encouraged to wear the brand to work, although you could also wear plain khakis and a plain polo shirt. Then, after a while, the general manager left. The new GM, a vicious, racist, labor law-ignoring psychopath, announces that we all have to switch to uniforms, khakis or denim only, and the navy blue polo shirt with the button down only, which was fine, but the company won't provide them, and the GM from hell waited 3 days before the deadline to tell us. And at the time, the store was very picked over from a big sale, so there was almost no acceptable stock, and their most common sizes in those styles were gone. About 60 employees, mostly part-timers, were frantically scrambling to find acceptable clothes with almost no notice, at our own expense, and nearly all of us had to look elsewhere. This was a particularly nightmarish prospect to me. I'd had my hours cut repeatedly in retaliation for reporting a work injury. The GM was later demoted over it, and another manager fired, but that's another story. I had no money. After rent and food, I had nothing left at the end of the month, and for the first time ever in my life, had to carry a balance on my credit card just to eat. And I can live on almost nothing. And by this point, the balance was maxed out due to car repairs. To make matters worse, my body is a nightmare to fit. Polos hang on me like tents, and button-ups always gap. Even if I could afford to buy the clothes I was now expected to wear, they weren't going to fit me to brand standards. I would not have time to take them apart and reconstruct them. I went to the managers and explained that I couldn't afford any more clothes. They'd cut my hours, and the GM had deliberately interfered with my job search, like I was really going to stay and put up with her around. My credit card was maxed out, and I had no money left. Could I please get some help? Oh, it can be any brand, just no logo. Maybe you didn't hear me. I can't even afford to go to Goodwill. Which was true. They blew me off again. So you won't help me. Suit yourselves. I called my mom and asked if she still had any of the navy blue cotton fabric left over from long ago on a sewing project. I was a fashion designer major in art school, and I knew how to make a shirt that fits me. I already had one pair of handmade jeans since R&R discontinued my preferred cut. The shirt met the required criteria of having collars and buttons, but I deliberately did not do a great job, and I know how to do a great job. I didn't have any time to make a collar mock-up and adjust the pattern for best drape. Oh well, the collar's just going to sit funny. I only had enough interfacing for the placket and the undercollar. Oh well, the collar already sits kind of funny anyway. I didn't have time to turn the collar points out exactly right. Oh well, they just won't quite match, and one of them is just going to stick out a bit. I didn't have time to fix some crooked top notching. Oh well, the thread matches anyway. I didn't have time to sew functional buttonholes. Oh well, the shirt closes with a hidden zipper anyway, so it wouldn't gap. I didn't have time or money to go to the fabric store for matching buttons and use several very similar ones. Oh well, you'd have to have a very sharp eye to notice. The fabric rolled and creased along the hemline in 3 or 4 places. Oh well, I didn't have time to press it, let alone hand stitch it. The first day of the uniform rule was in effect. Evil general manager got one look of my shirt and her nasty smug smirk evaporated. She was fuming, but she couldn't stew or say anything about it. After all, it fit the required criteria, and it was one of the best what anyone could reasonably be expected to do with no notice, no money, and no help whatsoever. Sewing is a lot of work, you know. Yes, I got the heck out of there as soon as I could.
Truck Parade by Bumblestum 1960. This would have occurred in the first few years of this century. At the time, I was working for one of our largest supermarket chains in a 24-hour warehouse, usually a three-shift pattern. I was the union rep for the night shift, and the usual procedure was that no new orders were to be started until after 5:45. This was sensible, as it allowed plenty of time to returning picking trucks in good time for the early shift to book them out prior to starting work, as well as giving the outright night shift to wash up before clocking out. Before carrying on this tale, I should add that all picking work attracted a bonus pay that, according to the time allotted to pick, measured against the time to complete and accurately pick. This could make a significant difference in one's pay. Furthermore, any pick that could not be completed by the end of the shift would have to be handed over to one of the early shifts, who could then pull about as slow as they'd like, knowing they'd be paid 100% bonus. Same for the whoever had handed the pick over, hence the 5:45 cutoff time for taking a new assignment. Around 2005, the company brought several new managers across the three shifts who'd never worked the business before. A departure from what they had in place successfully for many years, in that all management had worked the warehouse and knew how the job worked inside out. One of the new intakes decided to mend something that wasn't broken in the first place and decreed that no picking trucks should be returned for the early shift before 5:55. I'm glad to report now that these new rules lasted exactly one shift, and the start of the shift went around speaking to every picker, telling them to make sure that they were in front of their bonus-wise by the time they picked up their last assignment, and ensure that they didn't complete it. At 5:55 the next morning, a convoy of 50 or so picking trucks rattled across the floor, all sounding their horns on their way to the drop-off point. Every picker then had to hand back the key to ensure that their 100% bonus pay was logged before finishing the pick could be assigned for an early shift worker, who also had to ensure they had to be logged for their bonus payment. The only downside for the night shift was that many got laid off that morning, but things were back to normal the next day, especially after the early shifts adopted the same tactics. In ending, I have to say that this particular warehouse was run very smoothly, staff and management alike. There was never a question about trying to get something for nothing. We worked hard and were paid well. Just another example of how bad management can turn a good job bad. I've worked warehouse work before, and I can honestly say, if somebody doesn't know what they're doing, it can hold everything up. So it certainly is better to let somebody who's worked the job run it, instead of getting outside help. So let this be a lesson to all management and companies. Thank you. me to the office, why don't you? By Clary Sage. Back when I was in sixth grade, my class consisted of two grades for read aloud. Quite bland, but a weird requirement for the class. Fifth and sixth grade students. There were only fourth graders in this class, small school. And the rest was a boatload of fifths. During reading, the book chosen was one that I had already read, so I was allowed to chill in the back and read something else. Silent as calm in a medically induced coma. So while reading was happening, I'm chilling in the back of class, and my fellow sixth graders were being disruptive as monkeys in a banana packing facility. This goes on for about 15 minutes, with warnings to stop getting more frequent. Finally, the teacher blows her lid and begins screaming, "I want all sixth graders to report to the office right now without complaining. You will tell Miss Principal what you did, how you did it, and why you were sent to the office." I tremendously raise my hand. "Miss Teacher, ma'am, does that include me? I haven't," she erupts with milk-curdling stares. "Are you listening to me? I don't care what you were doing. I told you what would happen. Tell me, are you hard of hearing? Would you like me to speak up?" So, off I march with the rest of my sorry band of downcast friends, trembling, still holding my book. We unhappily stride into the office where Ms. Principal was kind enough to personally meet us, angrily sitting in her chair, phone in her hand after talking to my teacher. "You lot have gotten yourselves in a lot of trouble again, haven't you? Go on, I'm listening." So we go down the line, with all of my unhappy comrades explaining why they were booted out of the class. After friend three finishes her testimony, Miss Principal turns on me. "Last but not least, go on." I feel tears slip down my face as I quietly blubber, "I was reading a book, ma'am." I was a sensitive child. She looks me dead in the eye and goes, "What else?" "That's it, ma'am." My friends helpfully speak up with, "Yeah, she didn't do anything." She glares at me and dials up my teacher once more. "Miss Teacher, what did you say? Insert my username here. Did again? Say it loud and clear, please." I hear her voice tinly ringing out. "She was in the back of the class, wasn't focusing on anything." I muster up enough courage to squeak out, "You said it was okay." The principal says, "She says you gave her permission to read?" I hear, "Yes, but," gently peter out as the principal draws herself up and says, "So you say she didn't do anything wrong?" A defended sigh comes from the phone. "That's right," she mutters. "Pardon me," I say. I regain a little confidence I had lost. "But you told me to say exactly what happened." And hey, she apologized to me afterwards. "It's not my fault. She gave me instructions." She gained herself a lecture after that fact. The principal didn't enjoy how I, one of many students sent, that proved after the fact that the student was innocent.
That wraps
wraps up this episode. We'll see you next week. And watch out for those people who don't know what they're doing.